Welcome back to Dark Florida. I've got some incredible news to share. I've just been announced as a participant in the Skunk Ape Roundtable at the Great Florida Bigfoot Conference on April 5th. I am beyond honored to be a part of this event, and I'd love to meet all of you. If you're attending, come say hi. I'd love to meet you and answer any questions you may have. And let's talk about all the mysteries lurking in Florida and beyond. And if you have your own strange encounters or experiences you'd like to share, I'd love to hear them. Reach out to me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. Whether you want to be a guest on the show or just share your story, my inbox is always open. Now, let's get into today's episode. I'm sitting down with someone very special, my friend, mentor, and fellow Bigfoot investigator, Marion Gant. Not only is she a seasoned explorer of the unknown, but she's also a BFRO investigator who has attended numerous expeditions searching for evidence of the elusive Sasquatch. Marion's fascinations with cryptids started young, inspired by the legend of Boggy Creek and fueled by a family member's firsthand Bigfoot encounter. Since then, she's dedicated herself to the pursuit of the unknown, combining science, a deep respect for nature, with a relentless curiosity about what might be out there. In this conversation, we're diving into her firsthand experience, her thoughts on Bigfoot, and what keeps her coming back to the field time and time again. We also dive into an encounter that we had out in the woods. So settle in and turn the lights down low. This is going to be a good one.
Thank you. I love being here.
Happy to have you. If you could tell the listeners a little bit about who you are in your background and what got you started into researching Bigfoot.
I'm the daughter of two biologists. One, a bachelor's degree in biology, never used it. The other one had a PhD in microbiology, taught at USF. So I've always liked the outdoors. I always had a fascination with science fiction, Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, things like that. But I always thought Bigfoot was, I didn't know if it was true or not. I just knew there were fantastic stories out there. But this was, you know, back in the 70s when I read these books. So there wasn't a lot of information out there, not like we have today. What kicked off my fascination big time was the legend of Boggy Creek. I grew up in an area, lots of lakes and woods, had one of these parents, these mothers that said, get outside, would shut the door behind us. You know, we'd drink out of the hose, wouldn't come home until it was nighttime. And legend of Boggy Creek, it was similar area. I know it was Arkansas, but Florida, we had swamps, we had woods. We also had orange groves, cattle farms. And it was kind of scary thinking about there could be a creature out there. But again, I just read the books. When it really struck home was when my son had a sighting. That's what started the investigation, trying to find answers. Next to our yard, we back up to the Cypress Creek Conservation Area. It's actually a well field. Pinellas County's pumping all the water out to them. So they started calling it conservation area when people got upset because all their water, their lakes are going down. One day I came outside and him and a friend came running out of the woods. And he's like, Mom, we saw something. And I'm like, deer, pig, you know, be careful. He goes, no, Mom, it was big. And I said, deer, pig, be careful. And we do have deer. We do have pig. People have seen bears and a Florida panther back in there. But I didn't think anything of it. I was working on my computer upstairs, and I believe the Travel Channel was on, and there's a show about Bigfoot. So he came to me and he said, Mom, do we have Bigfoot in Florida? And I didn't want to scare him out of the woods. I didn't want to tell him about the skunk ape. You know, they love playing back there. I didn't want to scare him. So I said, no. I said, we have something up north. People are seeing a Bigfoot up north. You know, I don't know if it's real or not, but there are a lot of people. I said, but not here in Florida, no. And he said, okay. And he walked off. A couple months after that, we were waiting for school. I was in the car to drop him off. He's in the back seat. And I had a neighbor call me. And this neighbor had a house in my area. He had also knew another person that backed up to the well field in a different road. And he started asking me questions about my family seeing anything unusual in the well field. Because my family hunts back there. I said, no, there was a night where my stepfather had been kept up in a tree from screaming, but they determined that was some foxes. Finally, he said, well, let me tell you. He said, we saw a Bigfoot out there. I'm like, what? At that time, my son started jumping up and down in his seat going, I saw it. I saw it. I saw it. And I turned around. My friend said, ask him what the ears look like. I said, what did the ears look like? And my son said, I couldn't see ears. There was hair hanging down. I said, well, why didn't you tell me that you saw it? And he said, well, I didn't know what it was. And then when I saw the Bigfoot show, you told me there weren't any Bigfoot in Florida. So it turned out my neighbor, they were taking a golf cart down one of the roads by me, dirt roads, and they saw a Bigfoot come out of the woods, walk across the field, and go back into the woods again. A neighbor down the road on another road that backs up to the well field, they came home one night and their rabbit pens were tore apart and there were dead rabbits all over. She told me, I talked to her personally, that he was following the rabbits into a cypress head. Cypress, swampy behind their house. It was getting dark, dusk. There's a storm coming. The lightning lit up the area and it was standing about 10, 20 feet away in the trees. It gave him an asthma attack. She had to take him to the hospital. I tried to get her to report it, but she wouldn't do it. The individual that called me in the first place, his daughter had a boyfriend that lived in the area. And around the same time, this all happened the same time that my son saw it. He was driving on Collier Parkway is what we call it now. Another car was coming from the other direction. They both hit their brakes because a deer crossed the road in their headlights. And then a Bigfoot crossed the road in their headlights. And they watched it walk across. It grabbed the top of a fence post as it went over the fence. And the fence post actually broke. I mean, it stepped right over. It was an old fence post. We were talking about that with my son in the car, answering questions. And my friend said, why don't you call the BFRO? I'd never heard of them before. I called. I went online, made a report. And Carolyn called me back. I believe she runs the investigators now. She came out to visit to take my son's report. She came to my house. I asked my son, would you take us back to where you seen it? And he said, yes. We're walking along. He's ahead of us, walking back through the woods. Then he stops. And he looks around and he picks up a stick. So what's this stick for? Could it be for snakes? And he said, yeah. We kept going and we got deeper and deeper. And then he fell back and took my hand. He was a little bit old to be holding my hand. We walked a little bit further and he said, there. I said, what tree? And he goes, that tree. And I said, well, show me. He says, no, he would not go any further. My sister had to go to the areas about another 10 yards and touch each tree before he said that one. He said what happened was they were playing in the woods, him and two brothers. There's vines out there, wild orange trees, swamp. They were eating the tangerines, oranges, playing on the vines. And I don't know how far, maybe 20 yards, 10, 20 yards from there, the land got higher and there were big palmetto plants. They were about 4 or 5 feet high in some places. While they're playing, they notice sounds over there and it looked like they could see the back of something brown going back and forth. So as they're playing, they're seeing this thing every now and then. I believe it got closer because the youngest boy, he was a couple years younger than my son. The youngest brother said, I don't like this. I'm going home. He left. The other two, you big baby, kept playing. But then he noticed there were some sticks being thrown and they thought it was the younger boy and they're yelling at him, stop it. And nothing happened. And they noticed that this thing seemed to be getting closer to him. And at some point, he said that they got scared and they turned around and decided to come out. When they're coming out, they could hear something running towards them. They started running out. And at some point, he turned around and there was this big thing about 6.5, 7 feet tall, had its arm completely wrapped around a tree that was, I want to say it was roughly a couple feet in diameter. It looked at him and kind of went where it kind of, you know, you fake somebody, it faked you out like you're going to hit them or something. Did that. He turned around, kept running. That's when they saw me. When we asked him to describe it, there are a lot of bushes around it. He could tell that it was standing on 2 feet, but with the bushes around the trees and such, he could see the arm, he could see the head, he could see the shoulder, but not the whole body. There's a lot of brush. What really made an impression on him was the face. He said the eyes were bloodshot and they looked angry. It wasn't huge. It was like a big buff somebody who works out at the gym. That was the first sighting. And that's how we met the BFRO. My sister eventually became a investigator for them. I became an investigator later, a couple of years later. But we had a second visit again. I think it's because my kids are always outside. They both rode motorcycles, four-wheelers, trampolines. They were always doing stuff outside. My husband has a garage. He was working on his race cars. So one day it was just he and I. I'm upstairs. I'm working on my computer and I'm watching him ride around on his motorcycle. Now, we had tried to build a pond in the area where he had the initial sighting. So we had knocked all the trees down and everything. The equipment we were using, we borrowed, was broken, so it was starting to grow up again. At this time, it was a wide open area with reeds. Reeds are about 4 or 5 feet tall. It was also raining at this time, so it was very mucky. So you had our yard, you had some reeds in this field, and then you had the trees in the swamp starting. In the reeds in the field, they had taken a four-wheeler, and they made a couple trails through there, mudding on the four-wheeler. There's also on the edge between the reeds and the yard, there was a part of a track that they had set up with some hills to jump over. So he's jumping the hills, going around the yard, jumping the hills. I see him jump a hill, go around, and he takes it in the garage. Comes upstairs to me, and he's white. He's a lot older now, several years older, completely white. And he goes, "Mom, I think I saw it again." I said, "Really?" I said, "Where at?" He goes, "When I was over riding over there by the field." I said, "Well, will you go out and look with me?" And he said, "Yes," which I think is very brave. The more I learned about other witnesses saying, "I'm never going back," he was very brave. He started looking around and he told me he was going over the hill and he saw something large over the reeds. It was standing over the reeds and it ducked. So we go back closer to the swamp in the area between the reeds and the swamp. There was another alleyway between where the jump was and the swamp. I'm not seeing anything. It was mucky, mushy. I'm not seeing anything at first. I said, "Where were you exactly?" He goes, "I was jumping that hill and I'm standing there looking at this alleyway between the hill. I turn around and back in the swamp, there are palmettos scattered all over the wet mud." So it was back under the trees. And I go back there and these palmettos, something had pulled up a clump of palmettos. It was not cut because they looked like celery. You could see where it peeled it apart and it had bitten some and chewed some like sugarcane and was just dropped it all over the ground. There were no palmettos. This had to come from a different area. We were in a swampy area. There were no palmettos growing there. I told him, I said, "I think something was watching you. It was having a snack and watching you right around the yard." So we started looking a little bit closer. If it's there, then how did it get there? How did it leave? So we went back over to the reeds. And we're looking around and we found a handprint, which I wasn't new to this. I wasn't an investigator yet. I should have had something down to show the size of the handprint. All I can say, it was a good, at least 8, 9, 10 inches, at least tall. And I want to say another 4 or 5 inches wide. What really struck me is that the thumb was down low. You could see it. It was definitely handprint and the thumb was down lower than it would be on a human hand. We're looking around some more and I'm not seeing obvious tracks. And I thought it had to have gotten here. We went along the reeds, didn't see anything, went around back around to the palmettos. And I noticed something on the trees. You know how trees grow up in the swamp and they have all this growth around the bottom of it? I found a flattened spot. It looked like a bulldozer or one of those things that roll over and flatten out the pavement had gone over it and squished all the moisture out and it left the imprint of a foot. But it was on the edge of the tree. This thing was smart enough not to go through the mud. And as we looked, we found another one that was very obvious. But this thing was walking on the edges of the trees to stay out of the mud. I think the only reason we found a handprint in the mud was because when my son looked at it and it ducked, it might've lost its balance. But I looked in the reeds. I couldn't find tracks there. You would think it's soft enough. Maybe they're there and I just didn't know what I was looking at. But that was the second time we saw it. That's what really got things started because I was always under the impression it was a ape and that it was a vegetarian. I thought there's no way. We've only got 7,000 acres and surrounded by open pastures and roads and houses. There's no way there's enough food for something like that to eat. It wasn't until I joined the BFRO and started looking further into it that I realized I learned that no, that just like bears are omnivores. They eat what's available. They've been known to go in dumpsters. They've been known to rob chicken pens. They've been known to sweet feed from horses. They'll eat anything that they can find, opportunistic. So that makes a little bit more sense when you think about the areas that it was traveling through.
How many fingers did the handprint have?
Had five. There, can you see that? Share.
Oh my gosh, I can see it. Mm-hmm. That's definitely a handprint.
You see how the thumb is down? That's one of the tracks. You see how flattened it is? I didn't put anything for scale, but that's what struck me, because when I stood on this stuff, it bounced right back up again. But that was one of the tracks. That's what made an impression on was the face. He says it looked so grumpy. Its eyes were bloodshot and it looked grumpy. Maybe because they were playing when it was trying to sleep or eat.
In its area.
Mm-hmm. Those are how we found the palmettos on the ground.
Those have clearly been rooted because you see the entire root ball.
Mm-hmm. Some of them were bitten, but this one, there's a couple of them chewed like this, like sugar cane. And they were all in that area, scattered like that. Because I took a picture of the area, but you see what I mean? There's no palmetto bushes that size around there. I thought, well, I'll go back and see if it's peeking at us, but the resolution wasn't good enough. That was something.
You're a BFRO investigator. Have you taken any reports in Florida that have really stood out to you?
I will say there was one report that correlated with an anecdotal story from a friend. The report was somebody that was walking on the Florida Trail. They were in the Green Swamp, the west section. They had passed the sign for the Bigfoot camp, the Boy Scout Bigfoot camp. They said camping on a field. It was like by the swamp, but it had opened up a little bit. It was still on the trail. As they were setting up the tent, they heard something whistling. They thought it was a bird, but it was like a whistle, and it was traveling around them in the woods. Some bird they didn't know before. They went to bed, and in the middle of the night or some point, the moon had risen. I checked. They did have a full moon that night. He woke up, and this figure went walking by his tent. The moon lit it up. Now, he couldn't say how big it was. He just thought it was awful strange that this big figure, and it didn't look like it was carrying a pack or anything, walking by their camp at, I don't know, 2 or 3 in the morning. But what struck me about that story is the same friend that had called me up at my son's school when he'd seen it, he was on the Florida Trail camping. At this time, it was very wet, so they had to camp on the trail itself. It was the only place. While they were setting up, they started hearing whistling. And they also heard something walking around, but it was out of the range of their flashlight, but it was walking around the camp and whistling, and it did that all night long. And when you take those and put them together, interesting. But I will say, I didn't do a lot of reporting at the time. I mostly did the website. We had a website to take reports, things like that. I would post the reports, post the video. I would work with Ree Monteith. We had other investigators in Florida at the time. Ree was the one that gave me content to put on the website. I ended up stepping away from the BFRO because my sons, both of them were racing motorcycles. My husband's racing cars. I did not have time. I was going out to practices and races nearly every weekend. It's only been the last couple of years that I've gotten back into it. And that's how I met you.
That is true. I don't know if the listeners know this or not, but we do all of our field research together. She's been monumental in helping me navigate this field and this community. And we are out in the swamps all the time, checking out new places, looking for new discoveries. One of the things about your time in the BFRO is that you did attend several expeditions. Were there any things that happened on those expeditions that you went on that stood out?
Yeah. Yeah, we had some good expeditions at the BFRO. There were years ago. I remember my first expedition to Torreya. Torreya is this beautiful gem of a park just west of Tallahassee. I believe it's on the Ocklawaha River. But we were up there, my sister and I. We had taken a group. We went out for a night hike. And my sister had a thermal we were letting the group use. One of the women that attended the group, my friend Karen, she had a night vision, a really good night vision camera. So we had gone down towards the river from up from the house down towards the river. People have been to Torreya, they know about this. And we got a little bit lost but we finally made our way to the bridge that went over this stream. I believe Ree Monteith was using the thermal. We were taking turns, letting everybody try it. And all of a sudden she just went, and we're like, what's wrong? She goes, I just saw an arm come around the tree. She was watching what she thought was a squirrel or, you know, a raccoon or something peeking around the tree when an arm came around and circled it as it leaned out. She looked at it. She handed the night vision to somebody else, and they didn't see it. I believe it had ducked, or maybe they saw part of it. It ducked into the bushes because I guess it knew that we could see it at that point. Other people were trying to look through the night vision. I'm standing at the end of the line. I wanted to grab it out of their hands so bad. They paid to be there. You know, that's what we were trying to do, is we were trying to give them as much as an opportunity to have this as they could. So I was the last one to get the night vision, and I didn't see anything except the bushes by the trees were shaking. There was something in them. There was no wind that night, no wind whatsoever. And these bushes were shaking. I want to say the thing was maybe 10, 20 feet away. That was really cool. We had a lot of activity. I believe on later on a different night, some people on the other side saw something go running up a hill like there it was nothing. And this is growth with trees falling and stuff. They said it looked like a gazelle on all fours as it just went up the trees. Terea is the area that where later years, Stacy Brown and his father recorded that sighting on a thermal. That was interesting. I went to a second expedition many years later, and we didn't have as much excitement. A couple of the people in the expedition found it. We found some tracks that when you're in the group camp, there's this trail that goes down to this creek, this beautiful white sand creek. There's a camping area down there. The camp is on a plateau, and there's an edge around it, and in a gully that connected the plateau to the trail, a couple of the, we called them newbies because they hadn't been on the camping before, had found some tracks. I had a gentleman, he was a hunter. He would take people out, and he looked at them and he said, yes, these, I can feel the toes. I can feel the ball of the foot. The problem is that they were deep in pine needles and leaves. They were also at an angle coming up the bluff, so we couldn't cast them. It would have come right out. What was really interesting, and not only that we found that was about the best thing, you know, I think, was one of the women that had found the tracks had told me she had something unusual happen that night. She had something unusual happen to her when she was camping. We always told everybody, keep an ear out when you're sleeping, and we talk about it in the morning. Did you hear any activity? And yes, we heard something along the edge of that gully. People had heard different tents, had heard something walking by their tents. But she came to me with her friend and took me aside and said, we had something weird, but we don't know if we want to talk about it or not. And I said, well, what happened? And she goes, I woke up and my tent was glowing. She goes, it's like somebody turned on a light. And she goes, and I looked to the side, and she said there were two eyes. She said it was two bright white eyes, like eyes, looking through me at the tent. I didn't know what to think. They seemed to be sincere, nice people, and they didn't know what they saw. They said, but this happened to us. So I told them, go ahead. You never know. Back then, nobody talked about woo. The paranormal, it was not as big back then. A lot of shaking heads, and then it was dropped. And I have to admit, I dropped it too. But something I recommend to people, when you have something interesting happen, write it down. Write down what happened as soon as you can, because as years goes by, it might change in your mind. You may forget certain little facts. Write it down. Several years later, I was in an expedition in the upper UP Peninsula of Michigan, and I saw iGlow. I saw what looked like two little mag lights shining light out. It was not a reflection. We had no headlamps on. The moon, I believe, was out, but it was very cloudy because it had been drizzling, raining, very cold. It was not a reflection from the moon, from a flashlight. We were in the middle of the woods. There were no other light sources around there. Yeah, it was like too many flashlights. It was in the Saney National Wildlife Refuge. It was mostly for waterfowl. What had happened is a group of us got together and we parked and we walked down this road to it was like a pond that had an aluminum bridge that went across it. You know, so you walked through deep woods, got to the pond bridge, and then the road after it passed over, took a left around the trees. So there's deep forest, big forest around there. When the road took a left, there was also a ridge to the right that another pond was on the other side of it. So it made an area the trees stood out on the on the ridge. We did walked around while it was light. We made knocks. We did a scream. Walked around looking in the area. We found what we thought was a big boy trail, something big enough to break all the branches and leaves up to 8 feet tall in a shape, but it was getting dark and we weren't familiar with the area. So we didn't take, we're going to do that the next day. We tried different things. We would hear stuff, but we had somebody that hunted in that area. So we'd hear something and, oh, that's a loon. That's a duck. He'd just crush us. That's got to be a bit. No, sorry, it's not. I do remember as we're walking, we walked around one side of the pound. Something paralleled me for a little bit. Definitely heard something. I was ahead of the guys singing and they were hanging back. And they said when they got up to that area, they also had something. They could hear something following them in the woods for a little bit. But it dropped off because as we got to the end of the pond, there was a house there. And then you go around the house, you get back to the parking lot. We got back to the parking lot and some of us decided to stay and a couple others decided to leave. And of course, the guy who left had the thermal. Of course, those that decided to stay, we decided to walk back down this road, back down to the bridge and just hang out. It was a great group. We're having a good time. We're talking, we're laughing. We didn't want to go back in yet. I want to say it was about, I don't know, 11, 12, maybe 1 o'clock. And I remember I was talking to this one guy. I remember the conversation we were having. And all of a sudden I look up on the bridge and there's two of them and they're looking across the bridge. And I hear 2 o'clock. Yeah. You know, 4 o'clock. Yeah. And I'm like, what's going on? And they're going, we're seeing red lights. We're seeing what looks like eye glow, but red. So the other guys are on there and they're seeing it too. I'm not seeing red eye glow. I can't explain that. I could not see that that night. I mean, even if somebody stood there with their arm over. So at first I thought, okay, guys, you know, I was the only girl there. Let's make a make fun of the girl. But no, they were definitely seeing something. As it time went on, because it's like it disappeared and it come back. But I noticed, we all noticed there the trees on the ridge between the two ponds. Somebody said, was there a bush there before? Because there was something blocking the light between two of the trees. And then later on you look and there was nothing there anymore. And then I noticed, because the roads were made of a white gravel, the road that went to the left lost its turn. It looked like it went straight up. I'm like, where's the curve? And then the curve would come back and the curve would disappear. Something was leaning out of the woods dark enough to block the road. Two guys saw something cross the road on all fours. So this stuff is going on and I'm looking around going, why can't I see this? There were lightning bugs around, but lightning bugs, they flash, they fade, they flitter. But all of a sudden I'm looking and there's a sign on the side of the bridge and this white light comes out. And like I said, it's very, very bright. It just comes out and it goes back in. And I'm like, huh? And it goes out and it goes back in. And then two of them come out. And goes back in. And this happened for, I want to say, I don't know how long it happened. Several times. It was looking at me from both sides of the sign. And there's a gentleman sitting with me and he saw it too. I don't know how to explain it because they were, it wasn't like, if it was a firefly or something, how do you fly in parallel? How do you go back and forth doing peekaboo? Because that's what it felt like. It was like peekaboo. We're looking over at each other. Eventually, it quieted down and we decided to leave because we had this feeling the activity would go up and down and up and down. In fact, it seemed to increase when I went to the end of the bridge and started talking to them. We don't know if it's because I was a female or because I was getting to their side of the bridge, but it would get a little bit more. People would see stuff moving and then I'd come back, but it seemed to die down a little bit. And I know people said, well, why didn't you go looking? And we just had this impression that from everything we heard, the red eye shine were adults, the white eye shine were juveniles. And that's the impression we got, that the juveniles were checking us out and the adults were like, okay, don't go any further. We'll let you look. I know that's not scientific. That's intuition. But we talked amongst ourselves and we decided we're not going to push it. We can always come back the next night. We just had this impression that if we tried to push it, they would disappear. We decided we're going to go back, tell everybody, make arrangements for the next night. And it was funny because we're on this bridge and we turn around and here goes this white gravel road into the woods and it's dark. And we thought, great, what if one of them circled around? So we didn't work up the enough to go in there. But we walk it up into the woods and somebody said, sometimes when you leave, they do a knock or something to announce that you've gone out of the area. So we decided we walked into the trees to where we were pretty sure we were in the dark and we stopped. No knocks, no nothing. So one of the guys said, thanks. You know, we had a good time. The other one, yeah, see you later. Something like that. You know, just smart aleck. We turned around and we walked a couple steps and something yelled at us. The closest I can come to are gibbons. I mean, I listened to a lot of recordings and it sounded kind of like a gibbon, very high pitched. I can't reproduce it. Nobody can reproduce it. I do know is the first thing we did was we looked over to the guy that was a hunter and he was dancing a jig. He was jumping up and down, dancing a jig because he's like, I've never heard anything like that out here in these woods at all. So of course we're high-fiving. We're like, yes, this trip's been worth every bit of it. And we decide, should we stay? Should we go? And we're like, no, we're going to go. We turn around, we walk a few steps and it happened again, louder. And again, we're high-fiving and incredible, but we thought, no, we need to go. So we start walking again. And this time there's three or four voices. I remember three or four different voices calling over each other like gibbons in the woods in Michigan at 1 o'clock in the morning. Just, we didn't know what to think anymore. And then one voice came and it sounded pissed. So the way we impressioned it was like, stay, 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 stay. Fine, get out of here. Again, not scientific. But it was incredible. And the sad thing was I had a recorder and another gentleman had a recorder. And that's why I remember the conversation I was having, because the conversation I was having, my record was on the recorder and my recorder shut off a couple minutes before these guys started seeing the eyes on the other side of the bridge and his recorder cut off. It just, again, what are you going to do? It's not scientific, but it's happened. That's how the eyes with Terea, you know, when I looked it back later, I'm like, those ladies in Terea saw something. They saw something. I can't say I heard about eye shine or eye glow. And I just thought maybe it was, again, somebody misidentification, not somebody lying, misidentification. No, I can't explain it. I know Dr. Meldrum has tried at times. I went home and researched everything I could on bioluminescence, you know, chemical or symbiotic. But that's all in fish, beetles, bugs. Mammals don't have the capability. There's never been known to have the capability. And yet, there it was. That was really cool. I had one more interesting, I didn't have a sighting, but it was an interesting interaction. It was in the Osceola, which is the forest that's north of 10 in Florida. Eventually it goes into Georgia and joins the Okefenokee Swamp. It wasn't an expedition. It was more like other BFRO people. Sometimes we would go check out an area for maybe a future expedition. Because again, that's one thing they did try to do is they would try to give people the best opportunity they could to have something happen. We were out there. We were meeting up. My sister and I were there first before anybody else. And we found there's water everywhere. There's roads with pine tree forests, and the water was 1 to 2 feet deep everywhere. A couple guys came to pick up a piece of equipment where they had been grading the roads. And we said, is there any place around here we can camp? And they gave us directions to a pond, which I don't remember the directions anymore. There's more than one pond when you look on satellite. But we got down to it, and the pond was dug. It was man-made. And they had piled the dirt on the banks that made this little hill. And then there's a mowed field around it. That's where we camped, was on that little hill. Because if you drove into the field, you got stuck. We had to pull a car out, in fact, one time. We're all on this little hill that goes around this pond. The pond had tons of frogs, constantly going. While we're setting up camp, some people did say they heard whistling. My son said he heard it. I didn't hear it. I did walk around. I noticed that there's an area, there's palmettos on the edge and then the pine trees. And behind the palmettos, there seemed to be a path. But it wasn't, because of the grass and such, I couldn't tell if it was a human path, of deer, or what kind of animals were using. I just noticed the vegetation was cleared out. As we were camping, we got notice. One of the guys had a weather radio, and the weather radio said that there was going to be tropical storm force winds coming through that night, 20, 30 mile an hour winds. So my son had brought his big tent. He had a 2-room orange tent, huge, that he was going to camp in. You just have this little backpacking tent. He had set it up, and I said, I'm sorry, you can't stay and sleep in it, because if the wind picks it up, it's going to drag you into the pond and you're going to drown. You can't sleep in it. You can sleep with me or you can sleep in the truck. Well, he wasn't happy, so he slept in the truck. I'm in my tent, and I don't know what time it was. I just know it was late, and my tent started shaking. And it started shaking. And I thought, oh my God, the storm's here. I'm glad my son's not in the tent. And then it started bending down. And I've heard other people speak about this, about the tent coming down to where your head, the wall's starting to hit your head. And this is what was happening, bending down, starting to hit my head. And then all of a sudden it popped up and stopped. And I'm listening, and there's no tree. There's no wind. I mean, we're surrounded by pine trees. There's no wind. The pine trees aren't moving. The other thing I noticed is the frogs were completely silent. And that was weird. If you live in Florida, you know that frogs around a pond, say a predator is going around that pond, you can follow the predator by the frogs, because the frogs that it's coming up on will go silent. When it goes past them, they will start up and the next area will go silent and you can follow it. The whole pond was completely silent. And then I hear, by my head, I hear scruff on the grass. And I'm like, that sounded like a footstep. And then to my 3 o'clock, I hear snap. Something stepped. It turned out it was some branches. My son and another boy, they were going to try to go fishing. They make their own fishing. Yeah, they left the branches there and it stepped on them and broke them. And then I heard another scuff about 6 o'clock. And I'm scared. I'm scared. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, all it did was shake the tent. But I call it rabbit scared. You're frozen. You're going, go away, go away, go away. So I heard it at 6 o'clock. And then that's when I thought, oh, crap. If my son wakes up or if it does something to the truck, I'm going to have to get out of this tent. I'm going to have to get out. So I'm kind of waiting to do that. And I hear it take another step. 6 o'clock, maybe 8 o'clock or so. And then nothing. The frogs started up. I was like, oh, thank God. I mean, I was just so scared. And I go to sit up and the frogs quit again. It took another step back between me and the truck. And it sat there for a little bit. I don't know how long. Because all I know is I just close my eyes, go away. And at some point, the frog started again, but I did not get up until I heard somebody get out of the truck. I was scared I'd attract it again. So I don't know what it was, but we had somebody on the other side of the pond. Vehicles never came by. I could not find any tracks because it was mostly wet grass, not mud, you know, and not except where the trucks got stuck, but I looked back and forth on that field everywhere. I could not find a track. And the only thing I could have, you know, that I could really prove anything is everybody else remembered the frogs going silent. It was so quiet that it woke them up. But they didn't think anything of it and just went right back to sleep. That's the end of that story. But that was really cool.
Speaking of expeditions, I know that we have our own expedition coming up here in a few weeks. We actually were part of the scouting trip. It's going to be in North Florida in the Panhandle. You've previously been on an expedition here and you got some interesting audio there. Do you mind sharing with the listeners a little bit about that? We're going to include the audio in after your story.
Yes, this is a place in North Florida. I signed a non-disclosure, which is standard with the BFRO, because the last thing we want is somebody to know that we're having an expedition there and waiting to fool us or play any jokes or anything. So I can't say where it is. Last year in February, I went out there with some other BFRO people scouting around, and I was able to record some unusual calls. There was a woman there, Melissa Dare. She had a great call. Great call. She would just go up, nice pitch, and come down again. So we went to this one area, and she's making the calls, and there were dogs and coyotes. They would go off. But then something called back, and they copied her call. And we're like, okay, maybe that's somebody. We'd split up with other groups in the area. We thought, well, maybe it's one of them. We radioed, and they're like, nope, that wasn't us. So we thought, well, maybe it's somebody who stayed back at the camp. But we couldn't get a hold of them on the radio, so we didn't know. So she did this several times. And several times, something answered back. Finally, we went to meet one of the other groups, and we switched places with them. They were where we were at. She made the calls. Happened again. They were coming from an area past us. That's what the first group said. It was coming to an area past us, several calls. And then at some point, they didn't call anymore. We got an owl instead. It was kind of strange because this owl made the sound, same sound, 5 or 6, 7 times in a row. I don't know. I know people say, oh, they mimic owls. But I will say I have a spectrogram. I made a spectrogram of this audio, and it matches other owls. On the spectrogram, you can see where her call climbs up, holds, goes down, and whatever was responding back to her did the same thing. You can tell the difference between a coyote and the coyote calls and the dog calls and the people calls on the spectrogram. Everybody who has audio definitely need to learn how to use at least Audacity. It's a freeware version. And spectrograms. I think Mahangahela has instructions on his site. Just the basic instructions on how to set it up to spectrogram and clean it up and look at it. It's very exciting. When we went on the trip, I think it was November we went, and we were exploring the area where we think the calls came from, and we found an interesting area that we thought it was swamp, But once you went through the bushes and the weeds, it turned out to be a nice grassy area along a creek. So we're thinking maybe that's where this thing was hiding at when it was answering our calls. It was in about the right distance, about the right direction. That's why we were looking out there. Then you yourself had something unusual, and it ties in to my other stories. You want to tell it to us?
It does. I'll go ahead and share. By the way, I'm bringing my boots so we can investigate that area further next time we go. Because you do have to cross a little creek, and the one gentleman we were with, he kind of crossed over. So I'll be sure to bring my boots so we can kind of maybe get in a little bit further this time and peek around in there. Yeah. So we were at the campfire and we had just settled in for dinner. And it's so funny because it was right around Thanksgiving. And for Florida, us having winter is odd. I remember I have memories on Thanksgiving when I've been in shorts and a t-shirt because it's been so hot here. But this winter, it has been unusually cold. In fact, I believe that night there was actually a freeze warning that went out in place. It was going to be in effect from around like sunset till 6 or 7 a.m. the next morning. We're kind of settling in. You had just made some chili and we're just sitting around the fire. And then you realize that you lost your phone. Worst thing you want to have happen, especially at nighttime, was not an ideal time to go looking for it because it got dark out there quick and there's a lot of trees and we are in the middle of the forest. There is nothing around besides our little campfire and a few other campers.
And you can't get signal. So it isn't like, I am so glad I found it. I got lucky, but there's no signal. So you can't just, you know, dial a phone and listen to it ring.
That is a good point. Very remote area. I think the closest Walmart was 2 hours away. So yes, this is quite literally in the middle of nowhere. I think, yeah, there was one spot at the campground where if you stood super still, you might be able to. But I mean, worst signal I've ever experienced in my life. I wasn't prepared for that. We decided to kind of go out because earlier you had taken a solo hike. And we figured, well, we might as well go and see if we can cover this trail and see if we find it. You, myself, and another gentleman decided to go out and check things out. We kind of did it in a hurry. This wasn't a very well thought out plan. Like we weren't investigating. We had on no audio. There was no recorder going, no GoPros.
This was literally just find the phone. That's the mission.
That's the mission. That's all we were thinking about. So as I said, this trail goes around a lake and where the trailhead is, it literally backs up to somebody's campsite, trying to be mindful and respectful to the other campers there. You don't want to go walking through their sites. Just keeping that in mind. We're going down the trail and up ahead, Jeff is in front of me. I'm in the middle. Marion's behind me. I see these lights. I think we're already back at the camp. Like, that was a really quick hike. I see these lights and there's two lights and they're glowing and they're probably, I would say, 9 feet up in the tree. Then they go away. I make the comment out loud, like, do you guys see those lights? I'm trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah, you said, I think there's headlights over there. That's yeah, how bright they were.
Then they went away. At that point, I'm like, wait, come back here. Because like I said, Jeff was a little far up and you were behind me. We're kind of getting together. He's like, well, let's look at it. He turns his flashlight on. He starts kind of panning in the woods with the flashlight. The lights that I saw were about 12 o'clock on the trail. He's hitting the lights. It's about 9, 10 o'clock. They hit eyes. It freaked me out because I see these two large eyes and it is making a bobbing motion faster than I can possibly do, almost unnaturally so. It freaked me out. You can attest to it. I got a cold chill that just went down my spine and I was shaken.
You did really good because you were like, oh shit. And you started to take off the trail and you stopped and you came back and you're like, that's scary. But you stopped. You didn't keep running. And that's normal because it became real for you. That, it did. Yes, there's something else out there.
It did. Jeff, he's like, okay, light it up, light it up. So at this point, we all turned our flashlights up and we're looking into this brush and forest to see if we can see anything else. And you're kind of surveying things through the thermal. Jeff goes, well, whatever this is now knows that we know what's there and that you saw it and it is hunkered down. So kind of all talks amongst ourselves. We're like, okay, do we keep going or do we turn around and go back? We carry on forward as we're going up the trail. We get a little bit further up and Jeff goes, oh my gosh, I think I just saw something black moving alongside the trail. And he's like, it took me a second because I was trying to rationalize what I just saw, but I definitely just saw something. We shine in that area. You can definitely see some trails in there, whether they be animal trails, game trails.
I'm really excited to be going back again. This is going to be fun. We talked to somebody that grew up there. And she had some stories for us, but she wasn't familiar with Bigfoot stories. She was telling us about black-eyed children and big black cats and other things she had seen as she grew up out there. So that's another reason. I can't wait.
We ran into a lady at the campground when we were about to go head out and scout out a few more locations. And we had become friendly with some of the other campers. We're dressed in camo. That's one thing about Bigfooting. It's like an unspoken dress rule. You got the camo. We had the orange on because hunting season was happening. People kind of assume you got on the orange vest that you are a hunter as well. We are hunters, but just not in the regular sense. We're hunting for Bigfoot and cryptids. We tell her no.
The giveaway is a lot of us, we have these hats with cameras and microphones and all this other stuff on our kit that hunters don't usually carry.
Yes, that is true. She asked us what we're up to. So we tell her, hey, we're out here looking for Bigfoot and checking some things out. She said, well, I don't know about Bigfoot, but this area is known for black-eyed children and skinwalkers or crawlers. She told us a story about when she was growing up, there's a lot of streams and creeks in that area. They were taking one of the rivers up to go to this one particular area in the woods. She looked over. She saw a man and two children dressed in white linen. She said that their eyes were completely black and that they just had this incredibly creepy expression on their face. She looked at her grandfather, who was driving the boat, and said, did you see that? He said, no, you didn't. She said that that was the moment that she realized that he had seen those things too.
I got the impression he'd seen them before.
Now, this woman was a seasoned hunter. She shared with us that she had been on many hunts before, and in this particular area, hunting is huge. It's just commonplace. She's experienced. She knows the animals. She knows the terrain. For her to categorize this next experience in that way is what really stood out. She's getting off the river again. She's with a friend. They were on a boat. They were just going to go explore an area when all of a sudden, she said it was about four times larger than the regular Florida panther. Cat kind of pounced at her on all fours and let out a terrible scream. It was yelling at her. She said that this thing was black. She said that's a common misconception with panthers and Florida panthers, that they're actually not black. They're a fawn. She said that this thing was definitely solid black, four times the size of a regular panther, and was screaming at them. She just dropped everything and ran back to the boat. She said that the area in which this happened is known for this Apache Indian tribe that had been feuding with some families who had tried to settle in the area and wound up, there was a giant massacre. Definitely some strange activity happening in that area.
Yes, yes. I've got my fingers crossed. That's why we're going up there a day early so we can do a little scouting on our own. Because we're going up for a Bigfoot expedition, but we also want to look for some other stuff too. It's going to be fun.
Since there's so many theories about Bigfoot and what it could be, whether it be a flesh and blood animal or an interdimensional being, and even an ancient type of human, where do you stand on the debate?
Oh, I'm older. I'm a couple generations away from you. When I first started Bigfoot, it was almost everybody just thought it was a Gigantopithecus type thing in the woods. It was about the time that sometime around the period, I don't want to say 10, 15 years ago, that they discovered the Hop somewhere. And I want to say the islands in Indonesia or someplace like that. It's in the area of around the Orang Pendek, around those islands and such. Hobbit was very small, but what struck them was the skeleton. At first, they estimated it was 12,000 years old. They went back and checked later and they said 50,000 years old. But that 50,000, that's incredible. Because that's like, you know, a blink of the eye in the timeline of the Earth. They didn't know that anything had lived that close to, you know, modern days. Since then, there's been other discoveries. So the best way I've heard it described is that when I was growing up, it was commonly thought that we went from fish to dinosaur mammal, primitive ape, caveman, modern human. You know, you've seen the stickers. But actually, it was more like a Lord of the Rings, is the way I've heard it described. Very good description. We had different lineages, Australopithecus, the Denisovans, but there were, you know, it's like orcs and elves and hobbits and all these different things. And it turned out they lived a lot longer than we thought. And that it turned out, you know, with the DNA testing and stuff we can do, there's actually interactions between some of them. And some of us may carry some of those genes. There was interbreeding with some of them. I don't know. Some people think it was widespread. Some people think it was only when we actually interacted. I've heard people talk about how Neanderthals were actually built for colder areas in higher altitudes. And that because humans, modern humans, tended to stay in the lower altitudes and such. They didn't interact as much as we thought. Different theories. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. But listening to that, when Dr. Meldrum started talking about relic hominids, I think for me, that's where I'm starting to land because they're very smart. They're much smarter than I would say a gorilla or orangutan. And there are some smart gorillas and orangutans. We also have the, you know, we have some of these things being taught to learn languages, sign language. They're taught to learn symbols on a computer. They can drive golf carts. They can smoke cigarettes. They're very smart, but these things are several degrees above that. That's where I'm falling. Now, there's others that think that they're paranormal, they're UFOs, interdimensional. My opinion on that is that those aren't Bigfoot. Those are something else. They may be manifesting as Bigfoot. I was talking to somebody who investigated paranormal, and they were telling me about an interesting legend in this one place he was checking on, where that they had some sort of hauntings, but it seemed to change through the years, like the generations. One generation saw a woman in white. Another generation saw a dog or some creature. It seemed to change to what was popular at the time. And that's when it struck me. It's like, maybe they're not seeing a Bigfoot, but whatever they are seeing is manifesting as a Bigfoot because that's what they're expecting to see or that's what they're looking for. I always tell you, I have a front porch because everybody says you need to have an open mind. You need to have an open mind. I'm like, if you have an open mind, all kinds of crap's going to fly in. You need to have a screen door. And I have a porch. So my screen door filters things, but there are things that happen like the eye glow from the individuals told me, Terea, the eye glow that I saw myself, the what you thought were headlights. I put those on the front porch. Eventually, though, enough stuff is going to gather to where I'll bring it in. So I don't dismiss it out of hand, but I don't categorize it as Bigfoot yet. There's too many people. I don't think they have that screen door. There's nothing against it. Because there's always been people that have fought outside the box way before their time, and they may be right. And that's why I have a porch, because you never know.
We will definitely have to have you back on. I can't wait to see what we uncover at our expedition. I think we're going to have a really good time. And again, thank you so much for being such a fantastic partner in all of this, always being so encouraging. And this is Marian Gant, everybody.
Brooke, you have been a fantastic friend, and I have enjoyed it immensely, because I see this girl that's interested. I wanted you to be able to learn this stuff without getting sucked into some of the rabbit holes that other people get sucked into. I mean, you're very bright, you're very intelligent, and you see those rabbit holes, and sometimes you want to go down them, and there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, you've been bringing me down some of those rabbit holes with you, and that's what's so much fun. But we've been having such a good time doing this stuff, and I can't wait to see what happens in the future.
That wraps wraps up my conversation with Marian, and a huge thank you to Marian for coming on Dark Florida and sharing with us her incredible insights into Bigfoot and the mysteries of the wild. Her passion and experience are truly inspiring, and I always learn so much from our conversations. If you've had a Bigfoot sighting, paranormal experience, or an encounter with the unexplained, I'd love to hear about it. Email me at darkfloridapodcast@gmail.com. Whether you want to be a guest on the show or just share your story, my inbox is always open. Don't forget to connect with Dark Florida. You can follow us on Instagram at Dark Florida Podcast and support the show on buymeacoffee.com/darkflorida and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/darkflorida411. If you're enjoying the podcast, don't forget to subscribe and leave a 5-star review wherever you listen to the podcast. It helps keep these stories alive and brings more spooky content your way. Thanks for listening and stay tuned for more strange and thrilling stories from the Sunshine State and beyond. Until next time, stay curious and stay strange.